With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the I Can't Believe We're Still Alive After That Game podcast. Eric Steven, you're alive. I'm alive.
Yeah, much like Eddie Vedder, we are both still alive. So that game reminds me of one of my favorite jokes where Rope walks into a bar and sits down and the bartender looks at him and goes, "Hey, we don't serve ropes here." So the rope sheepishly walks out. Then he comes back. He, like, sort of contorts himself a little bit. And then he walks back into the bar. And then the bartender looks at me and says, "Hey, buddy, we don't serve ropes here." He goes, "I'm not a rope. I'm afraid not." So I'm afraid not is about where I'm at right now after watching nearly 5 hours of fetal position baseball.
And it had everything, five. Right? It had the setup where the Dodgers weren't hitting a lick, and then when they kind of scrounged together some weird way to get the bases loaded, didn't get a run. It just, everything that had gone to the wrong with the series up to this point went wrong. And it just felt like that was going to be the game again.
It had every test of like patience you could think of. It had... even like there were certain like, you know, euphoric times I would say, like that seventh inning was pretty crazy. But then like immediately gave almost all of the goodwill back. Like, and then you're, there's just this like walking into the unknown, the abyss, or you're walking out on the plank, I guess. And you don't know how long the plank is 'cause it's really foggy out. And you just have to keep walking, and you hope that there's still a plank, I guess. And that's sort of where we were at, like in the later innings of that game. And then, this is even before considering, like, wait, is Clayton Kershaw not in the dugout? Is he like secretly warming up right now? Like, wait, really? He's gonna then like
that's just this is a decoy, right? Just throwing him off.
And then to have it end that way, like with Kershaw on the mound, like there's a picture, and I'll try to put this as the picture for the podcast. But so there's a picture of Clayton Kershaw in like Carlos Ruiz's arms, like celebrating. That alone, like if you thought like, you know, years ago, how could that ever happen? But then like Kenley Jansen's like running out to like celebrate, like.
Why isn't he coming? This is clearly a complete game. Why is he in the bullpen?
Yeah, how is it,
or the
exactly,
dugout?
How is it not the other way? Yeah, Kenley Jansen, like, with ice on his arm. No, not really. I mean, talk about the yeoman's effort, man. Like, Clayton Kershaw came back, you know, 2 days after throwing 110 pitches, but Kenley Jansen, like, threw 51 pitches, like, despite never doing that ever. He just kept going. Like, he just... It was an old school, like this is the part. Like, this postseason to me there's been a couple tipping points for, you know, like the sort of breaking down the conventions of like you have to use your closer in a save situation, that kind of thing. It's just a matter of like picking your spots where they're most needed, and the number one thing is you have to get players to buy into doing that because A, saves get you paid. And, like, so it's hard for to convince a player to say, like, hey, we're going to take away a lot of your save opportunities, but we're going to use you in a really optimal way, but you're not going to get saves. So it's really hard to get a player to sort of agree to that. So, like, last night they used Blanton, Joe Blanton, as a setup man. They used him in the third and the fourth to get four huge outs. But those, like, those were huge outs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Nothing.
And then
The time he came in, I had no qualms with it. It's only sort of thinking back on it, I'm like, wait, third inning?
And then you use Kenley to get seventh and the eighth, and then one out in the ninth because he just kept going. And then that's like an old school relief. It's not something like you can't really do that. Like, it's the postseason. That's why it's a winner take all game. Like, you can't do that like every game, but every once in a while to like buck the convention and to get the buy in from the players to do that. I like that it's happening, and I like that it paid off.
Baseball, but then, when you have to win this game. Because baseball is such a long season, so long, series or five or seven games, such a long series, that there's always something. Tomorrow's always a concern. And that's why playoff baseball in these must-win situations are just, it's so much different and so much more fun.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that, though, is like, so I'm all for, like, you know, modernizing like bullpen usage, like forget the saves, like just bring in guys like kind of like the Indians do with Andrew Miller, maybe, where, you know, you're not worried about the save, you're just trying to get the best out. The problem with that is it's not really a problem. It's that you have to just acknowledge the fact that if you think you're always going to win, like you do when you're bringing in a guy for a save, it's not, you're acknowledging that these are the toughest situations. So sometimes they're not going to go your way, but you're giving yourself the best chance to win in a dicey situation. Last night, the Dodgers found themselves in the diciest of situations. And even though they won, like, it just feels dirty and messy. And you're just in this like pile of slop at the end, but you're somehow victorious. But it makes it a little bit sweeter, I think. But man, is it really tough to go through on a nightly basis? But I mean, just what a game that was. It was one of the most memorable games of my lifetime, I think, that I've ever seen. It was just crazy from start to finish. It had,
I think,
so
that's
many
the main thing, right?
Nuts.
Like, since 88, we have like the 4+1 game and the Uribe home run, and those are incredible moments.
Yeah.
But this entire game, just start to finish, was just stomach and knots, everything on the line. And from the Dodgers' perspective, you didn't know what they were. You had no idea what the plan was going to be. You knew Rich Hill was going to start. You knew Urias was going to come in at some point for more than an inning, and you knew everyone else was going to come in or had a chance to come in at some point. But anything else was possible. And even when you knew that, Kershaw coming in was way off the radar.
Yeah, it just, like, it was just nuts. Like you said, there was this complete element of the unknown, and that made it scary and exhilarating at the same time. So just nuts, man. It was something else.
It's also really nice in Dodger baseball, as a small note, is I tend to be the biggest apologist for whoever the manager is at the time, just because I think managers get blamed way too often, so I kind of counteract to that. And so it's so great watching a manager get praised for once in my lifetime as a Dodger fan.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things, like, you know, Mattingly got a lot of heat, Don Mattingly, for it's just, it's one of those things, like, you're never going to look good when, like, if like every single reliever you call on gives up runs, you know, like, and it's not necessarily that it was a bad move at the time. It's just like when nobody ever comes through, like, you're just not going to look good. Like Bruce Bochy, like, look at those three like championship runs that the Giants had. Like, they had mostly, I mean, they have some different guys, but they had a bullpen core that, like, was pretty nails for, like, all three of those runs. Like, Jeremy Affeldt, you know, had, like, an ERA in the ones, if not lower. Like, Sergio Romo was lights out. Santiago Casilla was very good for, I think, at least two of those runs. And then look at this year, like, the Giants were terrible in the bullpen. You know, they blew all those saves, and I'm not talking about like the sixth and seventh inning blown saves, because I think their final stat was like 30 or 31. That's not a real blown save. I'm talking about the ones like they blew like six or seven in the ninth inning in September, you know, like, and then they obviously blew their final game of the season. Like, but you look at Bochy, like, he's doing moves that he's been doing in the playoffs that those guys all just happened to come through before, and it works out. You look like a genius. He's going to the same guys. Sure, he did some different things this year, but as an adjustment. But like, look, if you have three rings because of the way you manage your bullpen, you're gonna probably be stubborn in the way you think about doing stuff. So, and it just didn't work out. It's not always gonna work out, but like you said, with Roberts, you know, to get players to do that, they, like you said, they brought in Blanton in the third, they brought in Jansen in the seventh, Kershaw obviously later, Howie Kendrick, like, he started what he didn't even did he started one game in the NLDS. Mm-hmm. He's a lifetime second baseman who's been playing left field, third base, and first base a lot this year. He's gotten guys to buy into roles as a first year manager. That's unheard of, like, really, like, that to command the amount of respect that he commands. Says a lot to his, like, sort of leadership capabilities, and the fact that that he's on the same page of the front office. I don't think there's any denying that. And like, people like to complain, oh, he's a he's a puppet for Friedman and Zaidi or whatever. Who cares? Like, you want those guys to be on the same page. Like, that's why they went and hired a manager. You know, like, your organizational, like, vision is going to be this. You want it to be on the same page. And the key is, none of your, if you have all these, like, you know, bright ideas or whatever, it's all well and good, but unless the players buy into it, it's not going to matter, you know. And Roberts gets the players to buy into certain things, and I think that's what's been paying off. And so kudos to Roberts for having the respect he in the locker room, and then for just managing a hell of a game yesterday. And it's just been, it was sort of the culmination of, I think, what's been a really great first season for him.
These are some of the best mornings to wake up to. You have all, like, when the national media, every single outlet is writing a glowing story about the game you won, it's such a wonderful feeling. Andy's article was great. Tim Brown came up with a great article at
Yahoo. Yeah, both of those are excellent.
So if you haven't read those, check them out. But read all of them. It's just bask in this, because we're about to go through it again for an even longer series against an even better team.
Get some news. Like, I saw the cover of the Orange County Register. I haven't seen the Times cover yet, but like, go out, buy a newspaper. These are the kind of ones you save. You know, I used to do that as a kid. Like, you would buy the. Get the newspaper and save it if it was like a big moment or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of cool. And oh man, to see Jock Peterson too, there, I'm just watching the replay of his home run right now. He was going nuts around the bases.
He like leaps into Dave Roberts' arms when he gets back to the dugout.
That was amazing. And then that's the thing too, is Dave Roberts, like, I think that's what the players love too. Like, Roberts goes nuts in the dugout. Like,
he's a little kid.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a game. I can't get enough of that game. I mean, I never want to watch it again. or knowing what I know, or like, I guess knowing what you know, it's easier, but
yeah.
My goodness.
Well, do you want to talk about the upcoming series? Do you want to just live in glory days?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. They'll pass you by. So let's go. Yeah, let's at least entertain the idea that the Dodgers are going to keep playing, and they have an actual opponent coming
tomorrow.
Up. Yeah, I know. What a weird turnaround. Like, hey, congratulations, you won. By the way, you play in 2 days.
On the road against the best team in baseball. No biggie.
Yeah, and it's they get like, so this, the entire like first round, the Dodgers and Nationals were playing like second fiddle in the you know, to the Cubs and the Giants mostly.
No more.
Yeah. Mostly because the Cubs were the big national draw, mm-hmm. but also the Cubs-Giants matchup was the better draw. And so, like, they got all the primetime matchups when they were on the same day. And they were on the same day all the time. And then The only reason the Dodgers got a primetime game in Game 5 is because the Cubs-Giants series ended in 4. So there was no Game 5 to combat. So now the NLCS is around, and so far on the times that have been announced, on the 3 conflict days with the ALCS, the Cubs and Dodgers get the primetime game.
And it makes sense, you know, Toronto and Cleveland. Yeah. The Canadian team, come on now.
Yeah. And plus, like, do they even have time zones in Canada? yeah, every game through game 5 of the NLCS, if necessary, caveat, is 5:08 p.m. Pacific time start. So they're going to be playing. That means all the games at Dodger Stadium, 5 p.m. So you're going to hear a lot about shadows. But no, it's going to be all night games. So it's good. It's good.
So who's starting game 1?
So nothing's official yet, but it kind of has to be Kenta Maeda. I know we talked a little bit about this. Sort of weird straggler Brock Stewart bullpen session from the other day. I suppose if anything was to come of that, we'll hear about it today. We're recording this on a Friday. There is going to be like stuff in the Wrigley Field. The Dodgers are holding like a brief workout later today, and there's going to be some media stuff. So if I'm sure they'll announce the starter today, before Game 5, Dave Roberts said it was Kenta Maeda. After game 5, he like kind of dismissed a question about it, but I think I saw the post game and it was more like, look, we just won. I haven't really unpacked like the mentally from that yet, so I don't really want to address anything about it. So he wasn't like saying not Maeda. It was just more like, hey, I don't want to deal with this question right now.
Yeah.
I think it's going to still be Maeda and then probably Kershaw for game 2. Kershaw, you know, only threw 7 pitches. Obviously, he warmed up in the bullpen. But Thursday was his throw day in between starts.
And he was going to postpone that a day. But
yeah, and so what happened was that just became his bullpen session was his save opportunity and warm up. So he's going to be probably ready to go for game 2, I would imagine, then Rich Hill game 3, and they'll figure it out from there. The roster is going to be due Saturday morning because they play Saturday night at Wrigley. So I would imagine they almost have to carry a 12th pitcher now just because of all what they went through last series. But also the fact that it's a 7-game series and they have the 3 middle games in a row, so you're guaranteed like a 3-day stretch, which they weren't necessarily in the NLDS, although they ended up did have that. So I would say I don't know who that means though. Like it could be.
Are they going to swap Barnes for Wood? Or
I think Barnes is the logical position guy out. And then so it's a matter of like, are you adding Wood? Are you adding Brock Stewart? What are they aiming for? You know, like I don't really know. I'm sure because like I was looking at the Cubs, like their left-handed hitters, it's basically Anthony Rizzo, and then Miguel Montero too, but like not, you know, you're not gonna carry like an extra lefty because Miguel Montero is up necessarily. But so that then their switch hitters are Ben Zobrist and Dexter Fowler, and they're both like excellent against both sides. So it doesn't really matter. I'm sure there's a little bit of a difference one way or the other. But the point is like they're just really good hitters. Like so, you just need you're not going to make them switch to get some great platoon advantage or something. And then also Jason Hayward, I did leave him off, but as a left-handed hitter. So I don't think they necessarily have to have an extra lefty, but Wood just might be the best next guy available too.
Sure.
And someone who could possibly give them length if they needed it. So maybe it's him. I don't know what's up with Urias because maybe they do add Brock Stewart with the idea that they need an actual starter in game 4 if Urias can't go. Like the way they used him last night suggests to me that I don't think they think he can go more than like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. at a. So, and I don't know if that's what you want to do in game four.
I've been calling the presumed game four starter Julio Holstaff. So
yeah, exactly. Right. I did enjoy that. That was a good. That was a good nod to Urias and then the whole thing. And but it's a matter of how many of those can you go through, you know? So maybe they do need a long man, and who knows? But I think you keep Urias around just because if he can give you some sort of shortened, pretty effective relief like he did last night, at some point you're gonna need that little 2-inning chunk. So. That was cool, and I liked that he got his the drifter or whatever it was called his pickoff move that Tom Verducci named
by the way.
No, oh look,
it's like Dodgers fans quickly saying not Bach, Nationals fans quickly saying Bach, and then every umpire I saw saying not Bach. So
all lefties are dirty cheaters, so they're all Bachs. We all know this. But no, but like I think specifically what makes that such a good move is I think that if I remember right, the strict interpretation of the rule is that the entire foot has to go toward the plate, and what makes Urias so good at that is his footwork is so I don't want to say ballerina-esque or like it's like an NFL wide receiver, you know how they keep their toes in, mm-hmm. like his foot control on that is like amazing, you know. That you can concentrate to that level and have it at the exact like right angle that you have to be to not be a balk, and that still deceive the hell out of the runner because it's a balk. And so like I talked to Matt Hurd just like a month ago about this, and he was like, he's like, man, I haven't like he said it's the best move he saw since like Dennis Reyes back in the day. And he said he's improved on it so much. He said it's so good, that move, and it's amazing. So I like that got some national play, but I would imagine he's got to be on the roster, even if it's not to start.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. So,
and I think I can't imagine too and many other big changes. Like I was thinking, John Lester is going to be the only. Left-handed starter they see, unless there might be something wrong with Kyle Hendricks because he's going to start game two if he's healthy. But I think they're waiting to hear on how he came. I think he got hit by a line drive or something in the last game. So I guess if he didn't start, maybe Mike Montgomery would, and he's a lefty. But I don't think they're going to they're clamoring to go well, let's get Kike here or something.
Right. So it's not like tar off the ball.
The way it sort of shakes out, I think they're still going to roll with Jock in center, especially if it's only one left-handed starter. And then they'll probably just keep basically the same lineups they've been going using. Well, it'll be interesting though because like I said, they're going to have if they have one less. Position player, maybe they're less aggressive with pinch hitting. Maybe Puig factors in more because if they can't use Carlos Ruiz as a primary pinch hitter all the time, maybe as a later pinch hitter, they use Puig a little more. So maybe he has a bigger role this series. That'd be something to see. Maybe he gets an offhand start one of these games. I'm not sure how he matches up. Haven't really looked that deep into it yet. It's going to be interesting how that sort of plays out.
One last question about the Cubs series before we go. When is Kinley going to be available?
Yeah, I would say May. I think because 51 pitches, man. I think just common sense says he has to have 2 days off. I think.
Game two.
So that it means Friday, Saturday, yeah.
So he can close out Clayton's 8-inning effort. Right. That'll be great.
Oh yeah. And so speaking of that other thing, the other one of the best fun facts was it was Clayton's second professional save, his first since like the Gulf Coast League in 2006, when his catcher was Kenley Jansen. Like, I'm not. And then also that game was against the Gulf Coast League Nats.
And managing that Dodgers team was Bob Henley, the third base coach who sent for the Nationals, who sent Jason Worth into another big play that we didn't get to talk about earlier in the podcast.
Biggest plays of the night where yeah. Jason Worth was out by like 1,000 feet roughly. It made it weird too. That would have made it 2-0, which would have seemed insurmountable at the time because of the way the game was going. But also, like, what made the game so tense and like where every single play is like either you're euphoric or angry. The fact that the Nationals' only run came in an inning where Daniel Murphy stole second base on a play where Yasmani Grandal should have easily thrown him out. He had a terrible throw to second. And he like also like slipped to his left or whatever. But then he scored on a single to right field where Josh Reddick, who has a good arm, like and an accurate arm, threw a bad throw and up the line that still almost got Murphy. Mm-hmm. But like any kind of throw from Reddick, you know, it nails Murphy at the plate. And so it's still scoreless at that point. But so that like all that was factoring in, and then I'm thinking, oh, great, they have a chance to get another guy to play. And then, like, oh, wow, he's out by a mile. the relay went to Seager, and he, like, turned and, like, he's going to do, like, a quick throw. Then he's like, oh, wow, Seager almost – this is a hyperbole a little bit. Seager almost could have ran Worth down himself to tag him. That's how far Worth was from the plate. So Seager was like – he was just like, whoa, he, like, paused for a second. He's like, I could just lob this home, and then – he's out. So that was pretty good. That was that end of the inning, and then it was a crazy play. It's weird how baseball sort of works out. But Kenley game 2, I would imagine. Baseball, like I said, always has a funny way of working things out. Like,
yep.
either the Dodgers are going to comply by losing game 1 and then not needing a save to rest their bullpen,
or
like a 7-1 triumph or something, you know, who knows, some weird game, like, or it could just be like, you know, Pedro Baez gets his first career save or something, who knows, like, the Dodgers went through the entire season with Kenley Jansen being the only pitcher to get a save, and then it was the first time they did that in 97 years, and then sure enough, they get two guys get saves in the NLDS. So,
well, enjoy the off day. Dodgers play Saturday, Sunday, and you and I will be back Sunday night or Monday, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the next plan, and then it's three home games next week, or maybe two if necessary, three. we'll be mixing and matching in some podcasts as we can. But thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll keep this going as long as the playoff run happens, and we will see you next round.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.